You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and Becky from Central Florida.
This episode features an interview with Beth O'Leary, freelance live sound engineer and tech based in Sheffield, England. You can find us on social media with Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, soundgirls.org, and our website, soundgirls.org. Please pardon our dust or Zoom sound or whatever you want to call it. We are a work in progress. Becky and I started doing this because we thought it would be cool to have have experience with this whole podcast thing. But, you know, we're interviewing people from far away over the internet and Zoom. So once we can get back together, hopefully we can get some better sounding recordings. But for now, this is what we have. And so,
yay.
Deal with it. So
we're a work in progress, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. So our spotlight guest interview today is with Beth O'Leary. She is a freelance live sound engineer. She actually got started when she was getting her degree in zoology and got distracted doing her volunteer work with the Entertainment Society and then ended up in the music industry instead of wildlife conservation. So over the last 10 years, she's done everything from pushing boxes in tiny clubs to touring arenas and spends a lot of her life in muddy fields working on most of the major festivals in the UK. I'm going to be honest, that sounds gross. She has a particular passion for flying PA, the black magic that is RF, which I'm very interested to hear about how it works for you guys. Travel, and then she says good coffee. So
good
coffee. I think we're going to have a really good time. Welcome.
Local cafe just reopened after lockdown. Well, lockdown's still ongoing, but one of my favorite cafes has reopened. So it's like, yes, you can get coffee.
Yay!
Out coffee is one of my favorite things to get for sure. Home coffee is not, it's just not as good.
Definitely not the same. Well, welcome, Beth. I'm excited to be talking to you today.
I'm excited to be here.
So let's just dive in real quick. I need to know about this, like how you got bit by the audio bug while you were pursuing zoology.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I've always liked music. I think because I grew up in Ireland, so it's quite different now, but when I was growing up, the music scene wasn't so busy. There weren't like a lot of people just wouldn't tour to Ireland because, you know, we're an island. So someone's doing a European tour, it's worth going to the UK, but it takes a lot of effort and logistics to go to Ireland. So you wouldn't get so many big gigs. But then when I was a teenager, I went to Ozfest in Ireland, which was like,
yeah,
went to Ireland and big metal festival. And just hearing that, or feeling the kick drum just like coming through your lungs, was just such a new and exciting feeling. And it was like, I thought that would be a really cool thing to be able to control all that kind of stuff. And I was always interested in like what happens backstage. But I wanted to work in wildlife conservation since I was like 9 years old. So I went to university, studied zoology. While I was there, Sheffield University had a really good, like active student scene. And they had a group where you could join, didn't have to know anything. They would teach everything for free, as long as you worked for free. So that's where all these gigs that were coming through and kind of came from there. And then while I was doing my degree, I picked up part-time work as a stagehand. And then kind of a few older friends kind of recommended me for in-house gigs at venues and stuff like that. So it kind of, I went in that direction and kind of conservation kind of went to the side, unfortunately.
So have you mixed at any zoos or anything like that? Because I have.
Yeah, no, I haven't, but one of my friends did a whole, there's a wildlife park near here that does a whole series of summer gigs. So unfortunately, I haven't had the chance.
So now that you're working in live sound professionally, do you do volunteer work for zoology in any way?
Well, I thought when I graduated, I thought, oh, well, I'll keep it up in my spare time. But just anything, I can't volunteer for anything, really, because it's like, even if you only do, if they want regular input from you. And if even if you're only doing one day a month, it'll be the day that you have to go and do a gig. Like, it's so unfortunately, but you know, I still try to get back to nature as much as possible. Or I was lucky enough to do an Australian tour last year, and I booked my own flights and stopped off in Borneo, and I went to the rainforest and I saw chimpanzees. Oh my god, I have a master's in this, orangutans. And I learned to scuba dive, so saw everything in the, they have coral reefs there. It was incredible. So I'd still, when I can, kind of get involved when as much as possible. But unfortunately, I can't do kind of regular volunteer work.
Sure. So you're a freelance engineer.
Yeah.
Have you always been freelance, or did you start at a company? Like, how did you get into just being freelance?
I think it's a lot more common here to be freelance than it is in the US. It's actually quite unusual to work full time for a company.
Okay.
Because I started out working at the university, some of the guys kind of put me forward when they were moving on to work at venues. But again, they just have rotas of people coming in freelance as and when. And then kind of, I got talking to people at trade shows and stuff, and then started working for bigger companies. But it's still, they really only take, if you're going out to the field, you're more likely to be a freelancer. They only have full-time and people who work in the shop kind of thing. And they'll send them on tours sometimes, but it's mainly full-timers in the shop, freelancers out on gigs.
Okay. It works pretty similar here too, I think. You know, full-timers are in the shop, and then on occasion they get to go out on gigs. I freelance also, so that's kind of, I found I get more work that way, and I get to do more of what I enjoy. Is that kind of the reason you did that, or?
Yeah, I mean, I like to be able to be in charge of my own time, and I feel, you know, sometimes you go into a venue and there's a full-timer there who's very secure in their job, and they are completely unmotivated, and they're just looking at the time, kind of going, counting down the minutes until they can clock off. And it's just, they're not very helpful and they're not very nice. And I kind of worry that if I was full-time, I would feel the same, because I don't have that motivation of you're only as good as your last gig, and you get paid. The more you work, the more you get paid. Whereas when you're full-time, I'm not, obviously lots of full-time people are very motivated and very good.
Sure.
I'm just kind of worried that if I were in that position, I would not be, I wouldn't be the same. And I just, yeah, there's something about not deciding gig by gig whether I do it or not that kind of annoys me. So I'd rather have the fear of sometimes not having work, but being able to choose to do the work I do want to do than going full time.
I mean, there's definitely been things that I wish I could have turned down, because you're working with like a nightmare situation. Like, I did a lot of children's theater, and so stage moms, and then stage, not, they're not the moms, but like the women who usually organize the children's ones are horrid. And so sometimes when I was working at places, I would just be like, I wish I could have said no to this, but I can't because I work here. And then one of the last ones I did, I'm like, you have to warn me about these. I'm not available for this person next time.
You know, when people email you and they just ask you if you're available for dates, but they don't tell you what it is.
Yeah, I told Brian, my the person who does it, I'm like, you can't do this to me anymore. I gotta know.
I randomly get stuck in that, like, you know, I get so excited to do a gig, and I'll get an email like, hey, are you available Monday or whatever? Yeah, I'm available. And then one of my friends tells me that's the thing I say the most, is that I'm like, why did I say yes to that? She's like, you say that all the time. And I'm like, I know, I say yes to everything. One of these days I have to put some boundaries there, because, like, I don't want to run sound for the Naked Magicians again.
Oh, no.
That's legit.
Yeah, I'm still really bad for, like, if there's a gap in my diary and I don't have a legitimate excuse to say no, I'll still say yes. But it's still being freelance. I know it's still my choice to choose to do that annoying thing rather than having to. A few years ago, I was doing, there was like a, we were working in an old steel mill, which is like all big and echoey and stuff. And it was a children's Shakespeare festival, so they were like reenacting Shakespeare in the original language as well, rather than like updating it, which I thought was a bit, they were grade school kids, but it was, they did it wow. quite well. But it was massively disorganized. It was run by like amateur dramatic society type people who are usually actors, but they're, I don't know, volunteering for this thing. And one, and it was a different organizer every day because it was all different schools coming in, and like they'd each do an act each, and it was just a nightmare. But this one, this one woman came in and she had a folder and had everything organized and knew who needed to be where, when. And the person running the whole thing, who was a bit of a theater lovey, kind of came up and she was like, "Oh my God, you're so organized. You're so great. You know, someday when you're old and lost your looks, you can have a job in the tech box."
No.
Oh, wow. Right in front
of you. And the lighting operator, it was like, the girl, the woman wasn't even like amazing. She was just not awful. Because she had shown some like organizations like, "Oh, when you're old and ugly, you can join these guys." Like, oh, thanks. Yeah.
Wow. I wonder what she considers old enough. Like, come in with my walker, I'm good to go. That's funny. So so I got a question for you here about this Whitney Houston hologram tour that you did. Because I've never met anybody who did a hologram tour, for one. I've never seen a hologram tour. And you were on the Whitney Houston hologram tour, and I adore Whitney Houston. Like, she's like it as far as female singers for me go. So adored, I guess I should say. But I still adore her. I still listen to her music all the time. It's just a sad thing for me. But tell us about this hologram tour. How did it start? What did you do on it? Was it as cool as I'm imagining?
Well, I can't get too into too many details, okay. Because we have to sign NDAs because of the hologram technology, and I understand the hologram technology anyway, so I can't really talk too much about that anyway. But so the company I do a lot of freelancing for here in the UK called SSE Audio, one of the account managers got me to do the first hologram tour that came to the UK, which was Roy Orbison. They're all run by Base Hologram, who apparently their Base are like a big entertainment conglomerate in the States, based in Vegas.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Got a hologram department. So Roy Orbison was the first one, and they got us to come and provide PA and control package for it for the European tour. I was just, that was with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. So I was doing stage for that. A lot of DPAs on violins.
I bet, yeah.
So then once that went quite well, so, and I was flying PA as well. And so they wanted me back for the next one, which was Roy and Buddy Holly, but I couldn't, so I was taking time off to have surgery. But then when Whitney Houston came back around, you know, our account manager kind of likes keeping people who work together well together. So the same three people who had done Roy Orbison, we did Whitney. For that, it was just a straight band, very good session musicians, all lovely people. So no DPAs, thankfully. Most of my day was actually flying PA, but I kind of helped on stage as well. It's pretty similar to most normal tours, except you have fewer days off because the singer doesn't need to rest her voice. the way it works from our side of it is that you've got the hologram footage and it's time code synced with playback tracks from Monitor World. So that's kind of, that's the only difference, is you don't have a sound check is a lot quicker, so because you don't have the leading lady there.
Sure, I bet. So do you run it like a normal sound check with the band and then add in the vocal track and all that?
I mean, there's also like they're playing live. No one's miming or anything. Well, you could say that hologram is miming, but they are actually playing live. But then there's also tracks on top of that and layers and stuff. So you're still triggering from Monitor World, but it's kind of, it's, you know, when you do a sound check before the singer turns up. It's kind of like that, but then the singer doesn't turn up and you can all go to catering earlier. So
it just seems like such a fun thing to try to do. Like I've never done anything like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Not having a lead singer and a hologram. So fun. What kind of PA were you flying for that tour?
This time round, it was L-Acoustics K2 because we were doing kind of large theaters and small arenas. So that was quite nice. Flexible PA for those kind of spaces. The first time round, we had Meyer for Roy Orbison.
Where did you learn to fly Meyers and L-Acoustics and all these PAs, just by default, or do you do training?
Yeah, well, when I started working for SSE, they do like all the major festivals in the UK, so they need a lot of people over the summer. So that's kind of like when I got my foot in the door with them. And big festivals need big PAs, so kind of everyone gets involved. And, you know, each stage has like 8 people on it, so at least 4 of them will be flying PA. And for the first couple of years, I was actually just running the cables in the dirt underneath the stage. So eventually they let me touch the PA. I learned from like some of the best PA techs in the country here, who were very patient with me and taught me the right things. And then after a few years of doing that, I got around to actually getting the training for L-Acoustics. Meyer, I don't use as much. I think I've only done a couple of tours with it, but it's like, once you know how to fly one PA, all you really need to do is kind of go, oh, well, for this company, they have these kind of foibles and it's this way around. But, you know, it takes about an hour. Like if it's something I've never used before, then I'll take time aside while we're prepping in the shop and kind of go, oh, hey, how does this work? And, you know, you're going to get shown once or twice. And then it's good to go.
Sweet. Well, your blogs I have been reading and enjoying immensely for a couple years now, since they've been on the Sound Girls website anyway. Where can people find your blogs other than Sound Girls website?
Just Sound Girls. I keep thinking about having a web page, but
I wasn't sure if you did or not, and I didn't see it, so I wanted to ask. But man, y'all, go read Beth O'Leary's blogs. They're awesome. You're a great writer.
Thank you.
I love it. I share it with my students also, because I write blogs, but mine are not. Yours are better. I like them a lot more.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, any suggestions for what I should write next, please tell me, because I'm running out of ideas. And it's always like, I keep thinking, oh, maybe I should write that one next. And then someone else writes it the month before. It's like, no.
Right. One of the blogs I was reading that you have, a couple of them, you talk a lot about client relations. And one in specific that I really enjoy, like a quote that you said, client satisfaction while you're troubleshooting is one of the hardest things to pull off. And I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, because being in freelance world and people knowing you're the point person and all that too, you're talking to clients, you're working with clients, plus you're probably flying the PA or running front of house or whatever you're doing at the time, or monitors, you know, and you know, all heck breaks loose. You've got 2 hours to showtime, your client standing there. Like, how do you handle that type of stuff?
I mean, for me, sometimes I don't handle it the best, even still. Like, I feel there's a lot of people who do this job. We've got a kind of engineer mentality, which is, you know, you can focus and you're very technically minded, which is good. But at the same time, you can be so focused on what you're doing that you don't notice that the client stood right behind you, kind of going, oh my God, everything's on fire. This is awful. And, or you don't notice that you've got 2 colleagues standing there going, can we help? And if you just took a breath and kind of looked back and went, okay, actually, can you look at this while I look at this? And, the number one thing is to turn around to the client and reassure them, like, let them know what's going on. Don't lie to them and say, oh, everything's fine, when it's obviously not. But just kind of go, look, this has just happened. It's going to take a few minutes to sort out, you know, depending on what it is, kind of go, hey, band, go get a cup of tea, come back, you know, because there's no point in them standing on stage getting in the way. And just letting them know that you're aware of them and that you are doing this for them and it will be okay is like half the battle, I think. And it can be hard and it can be embarrassing, especially, you know, when tensions are running high and everyone's getting a bit stressed out, but just kind of taking a breath and saying, yep, this has gone wrong, but we are sorting it, is usually enough to kind of get them to relax and you can get on with what you're supposed to be doing.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, I found taking that moment, because I have students, and if something's not working in front of my students, you're like, oh, great. I'm the one that's supposed to be teaching you this. And like, it's just not functioning properly. So I'll talk through what I'm doing. And I know that's really helpful for my students when I'm training somebody, but it's not like you could do that with a client. Like, you can't be like, okay, well, I'm doing this and then this and then this, because they don't care. But I do try to take that moment, you know, like
I think some people take it a bit too far the other way and just have like a 20-minute conversation with the clients of being like, oh, and then this happened and the work clock is slipping. It's like, they don't care. Just say, we're having a slight issue with this. Give them a rough estimate of how long it'll take to fix. Always overestimate, because if you're quicker, then you look great. And if you take longer, then they get annoyed. So like a generous estimate of how long it'll take, and then they'll be able to get on with what they need to organize. And they can kind of go, oh, well, maybe we can like put a different band on first, or we can do whatever it is, depending on the thing. If they know what's going on, they can make decisions rather than
know what time to come and check back in. So they're not hovering over you.
Exactly.
I like that too. Like what you said, you know, overestimate your time. That's such a great point. Like especially the newbies that don't know that, you know, to let them know. And just, you know, it's probably going to take you about a half hour to do something. Tell the client 50 minutes to an hour if you've got the time to do that. Always, because if you come back to them and say, you know, oh no, we got it all figured out, and actually only took you 20 minutes to do it, and it's under the time you told them, then you're already super impressive to them. Like, they're like, oh, they can figure this out.
It's called the Scotty principle from Star Trek, I think. Like, the engineering department always overestimates how long it'll take. If you think you have one problem and then you fix it and you find out you have another problem, then you have to go back to the client again and go, oh, actually, this is going to take this long. It's like, just give them a nice long time. And if you're done quicker, then great.
Cool. Yeah. Always have a buffer time for yourself, right? And if, and in worst case scenario, is at least you give yourself time to go to the bathroom, or maybe best case scenario.
So many clients don't schedule that in. Like, it's done down to the minute. It's like, when do I breathe?
Right. Couple quick questions for you here. What's your favorite PA? Do you have one?
I think probably L-Acoustics K1, because that's what I have most experience flying. I don't do front of house very much, so I don't care what they sound like as much as most people would. Like, obviously I do care, and L-Acoustics does sound great, but for me, I like, it's more about how practical it is to fly and set the angles and all that kind of stuff. So K1, K2, I think is a great system, a very flexible system, and it sounds great. And it's, you know, that kind of nice middle ground, because DMB is very good straight out of the box, but there's less you can control about it. I mean, these days, you can control more bits than you could before. And then things like, I don't know, some other systems can sound absolutely amazing, but you've got to really work at it and get into the settings before that will happen. Whereas L-Acoustics is quite, you know, even if not the best person sets it up, it's still going to sound great. And if someone great sets it up, and if someone great is mixing on it, then it sounds fantastic.
I like that. What's your go-to beverage? Oh, I think we said that in your bio. Say again.
Coffee.
Yeah, we said that in the bio. We already talked about coffee. I forgot. I need to have another cup of coffee maybe, and that will help me remember what I just asked you. In the Sound Girls profile spotlight that we interviewed with, we asked you one of the questions we asked was, what, if any, are some obstacles or barriers that you faced? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, when people know that I blog for Sound Girls and they don't know what Sound Girls is about, they basically think I blog about how much I hate men, which is not the case. And I'm not just blogging the whole time about sexism, but it does happen and I have encountered it. It can be frustrating because a lot of the time I am the only woman in the room or on site or on the team. And sometimes you know, you can't always say, oh, it's because of sexism. Sometimes it is just I have personal clashes with people. But I do think there's been a lot, I've had to prove that I am supposed to, like, literally had to prove that I'm supposed to be in the building so many times. Like, I get asked for my AAA pass way more often than my male colleagues. Even when I'm stood there, like, with my hard hat and my radio and my in-ears around my neck, and people are like, can I help you? Are you supposed to be here today? Like, working here? Like, so yeah, I do feel sometimes I've missed out on some gigs, or, you know, I've had to, like, if I've been in charge of a team, I get questioned a lot, and you can tell that there's often, well, not often, there can be some individuals who find it very difficult to take direction from a woman. So that can be quite tough. Or people just plain don't talk to me. Like, I've done monitors for people and I've introduced myself, and they've looked right past me and gone and talked to the hairiest man in the room. And even they've gone, I don't know, that's your monitor engineer. They just won't connect with me. So it's like, okay, well, I tried, and your monitors are there. If you want anything changing, then you're gonna have to figure out a way to do that without talking to me. Good luck. But yeah, apart from, I mean, it's definitely not as bad as it used to be, and I've definitely worked with a lot of really great people and good allies as well, which is means a lot to me. Apart from that, I think my main obstacle is I'm very self-deprecating, and I've got resting bitch face as well. So
resting bitch face is one of the hardest things to overcome, and I don't think I've fixed that yet.
I have permanent lines between my eyebrows from mine. It's like, yeah. Great. Yeah. And people always think I'm like so mad, but I'm concentrating with my eyebrows down like that. That's just how I concentrate.
It's just my face.
That's so funny.
But it's a kind of another thing about, like, dealing with clients is you have to reassure them. Like, even if you're not having a good time, if they think that you aren't in control of things, then they're going to start worrying and they're going to start panicking. So when I'm coming from Ireland, we're a very modest culture, like, especially women, like, you're supposed to kind of be as modest as possible, and if anyone's self-confident, then they're seen as arrogant. So I've had to kind of train myself out of saying, oh, well, I'm not really great at that thing, because, well, you're being paid to do that thing. So you need to, like, don't say that they've got the wrong person for the job, you know. So trying to get that balance between being honest with people about your abilities, but still being reassuring and professional, is something I'm still kind of working on, I guess.
Do you think that the sexism over in the UK is getting, you said it is getting better, but are there steps that you guys are taking on the other side of the pond here to help that in our industry too?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm a member of a few Facebook groups of, like, not just Sound Girls, but, you know, kind of a few kind of more general ones. And I've noticed in the last few years, actually, that, you know, on certain forums, you know, and you guys have the same ones in the States, where someone will just post some stupid photo meme, and there's a lot of them that are sexist and pretty horrible. And I've noticed over the last few years that's happening less. And when it does happen, a lot of people stand up and say that's not okay. And most of those people are men, which is really great to see.
Yeah, that's great to see.
Yeah, I haven't really seen any kind of, like, national industry anti-sexism work, but we're just becoming more open and more honest as an industry, I think. Like, Music Support is a charity that's working to support people in the industry with mental health issues. They're very active at festivals, you know, and because I'm sure it's the same in the States, where suicide is quite a bad problem in the industry. It takes far too many lives. So everyone's trying to kind of be more open about the issues that we face and say it's okay. You don't have to man up or have a thicker skin or whatever stupid phrases. So I think equality for women is coming along with that as well, of kind of, like, it's not such a macho culture anymore.
That's great. Yeah, I think in my lifetime, I've seen that go from a man's world to, oh, you know what? It's a man and a woman's world, or it's a, you know, it's an all-inclusive world. I mean, it's, we're not quite there yet, but I've actually seen the needle start to move, you know, which when I started out, there was no needle movement at all. I don't even think there was, like, you know, a needle, you know.
It's kind of, I mean, you still get a bit of that of, like, because, again, on the forums, so many women who are doing degrees in audio do their dissertation on why aren't there more women in audio, and it's like,
yeah,
if a dissertation and a survey could fix it, it would have been fixed by now. Like, I'm really sick of answering surveys about women in audio, but anytime they go on the forums and they say, oh, I'm doing this research, well-meaning but ill-informed men will jump on and go, there's no sexism, there's no discrimination, if women aren't here it's just because they're not interested, it's fine. It's like, oh, that's really not the case.
One last thing I want to talk about is real quick. We're kind of running out of some time here, but one of the things SoundGirls is doing is mentorships. And I know that you've taken it on yourself to mentor people while you're out on the road. And I think that's a proactive thing we can do to get, you know, more people in our industry and be more diversified. So can you speak a little bit? You were a monitor engineer, right, when you did that?
Yeah. I had some people come to Whitney as well.
Great.
But got a short run. So. When I did, so I worked for an artist called Kylie Minogue, who's like, she's not very big in the States, I think, but she's huge in the UK and Australia.
She's not small here.
Okay, well, the album she had out when I was working with her was like a kind of country style album. So I think it was kind of like, it's not going to go so well in the States. Like, they've got enough country, leave them.
Yeah.
But so I did 6 months as the monitor tech for a very talented and lovely monitor engineer called Gavin Tempany. So when I had the women shadowing me, that was while I was teching. I spent 6 months depping for Gav as the engineer, but I didn't have people. I had my mentor come and see me in Australia, but apart from my mentee come and see me in Australia. But apart from that, I didn't have other people on because I just didn't really know what the schedule was going to be like. And it was very stressful. And it was kind of like, when I have shadows in, I can't concentrate fully on what I'm doing. And I just can't have that. Like, if when I'm doing sound check, I can't take my eyes away from the stage. So it didn't work out for that, unfortunately. But yeah, when people come, it's not, I think I disappoint them sometimes because they think that they're going to be an extra pair of hands and they're going to set everything up from the beginning to the end. But an arena level, it's like a construction site. Like, you can't have like students in first thing in the morning because you need to have your hard hat, you need to have steel-toed boots, you need to have experience of working in these industries before, and you need insurance to be there. So for that, for the Kylie gig, I had people come in kind of more towards the afternoon, so when we had already set stuff up, maybe they could help a little bit with marking up the stage, but that was, we had it pretty slick by that point, so there wasn't much work to do. And I more just kind of gave them a tour of things rather than them helping out, and we didn't have a support band either, so they couldn't help with that either. And then I gave them a listen pack and we sat in on the sound check, and so they could listen to how that goes, because everything was completely on in ears. It's so weird, like, even the band, the drummer had an acoustic set and electric set, like, kind of combined. So some songs were on, some were on acoustic. The guitars were all Kempers. Keys were DI'd. Everything, like, the stage was, like, completely silent, if apart from the drum. So I'd give them headphones and a listen pack. And it's really, it's completely different to what it sounds like on stage and what you might think a gig sounds like, because they all have talkback mics,
right?
And use the talkback mics, just chatting crap while they're supposed to be concentrating. So I hope it was quite useful that they kind of saw that's how that actually works. And that's how people kind of get keep in time, decide when to trigger the next track, all that kind of stuff. So I would like to have more people. I try to get people in as often as possible, but a lot of the work I do is kind of, you know, corporate events or rehearsals and things like that, where I just can't have, I can't get clearance to have other people in, and festivals as well. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to get passes for people who aren't working there. So,
well, thank you for what you are doing and what you've been able to do, because I think that's great. You're putting feet and training to something we've all been talking about for eternity, you know, and people are seeing other artists and other acts and other women in the industry getting involved in those things and shadowing each other and helping one another, you know, climb the ladder. And we appreciate you for that. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate Sandra. It's made a huge difference. Because it can feel really lonely. Like people always go, oh, I work with lots of women. And it's like, no, you've worked with one woman per tour for the last couple of years. And that woman has not been working with other women. So.
Well, thanks for being a sound engineer advocate, not just a sound woman and advocate, but a sound engineer advocate and not a man hater, but also somebody who loves to work with all of us, right? Yeah. And just for what you do, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time, Beth.
Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast, Resonating Beyond Sound. Catch you next week when we talk to another amazing sound human. Have a great week.